Very good. Okay, so thank you very much for having me. I'm not quite sure how this session is going to pan out. I've been slightly updated as to what the format can be, so let's see. But mostly what I'd hope to do is to talk for a few minutes and then have a bit of time for some questions if there are any. The first thing that was just occurring to me was that it's almost exactly 10 years ago since I first walked into a Buddhist centre. Yeah, almost to the day. It was September 2009 I walked in. So I was at the tender age of 23. At that time I was... Well, actually by that point I'd been meditating in various different ways for about 7 years, since I was 16. And done very well at school, ended up at Oxford University, played university badminton, and ended up on a very ambitious, high-flying teacher training course, which claimed to be for exceptional graduates. So I was teaching at that point in an inner city school. Yeah, an inner city school in London, which had lots of challenges associated with it. And very much at that time, although I was already familiar to some extent with Buddhism and meditation, I was looking around me at who the people were that I might become, if that makes sense. I remember particularly being at a retirement event for one of the teachers in the school I was working at. And just reflecting, I don't want to be like that. Yeah, looking at that person and thinking, yeah, this is what 40 years of living for the weekends looks like. Yeah, and I don't want to be like that. I found the West London Buddhist Centre, age 23. I was the youngest person there by about 10 years. And the next person was the second youngest by about 10 years. And I think most of the Sangha were in their 50s and 60s. Yeah, which is... at least at that time was pretty common. Yeah, pretty common in the UK, certainly. And I think, although I'd come from a Church of England background, so I was kind of used to that sort of demographic, used to and to some extent comfortable with, I probably could have just carried on being a participant in that centre for, you know, just sort of going along to Sangha events and participating in that. But were it not for two things, which I'll come back to in a minute. but first, what I'd like to do is just a survey of the people here. So a survey of the International Council plus guests. And it's audience participation. And it involves you getting out of your chairs. I know. if you need support, just... Okay, so what I'd like you to do is to stand up if you meet the following criteria, okay? So, yeah. Just stand up and then you can sit down again, yeah? So the stand up if you encountered the Dharma in your teens. Very good. Okay. Okay. Stand up if you encountered the Dharma in your early 20s, so 20 to 25, let's say. Okay. Sit down. What about your late 20s? So it's 20 to 26 to 30, something like that. Thank you. Are you getting an impression of something, yeah? Okay, so what about if you encounter the Dharma in your 30s? Good, thank you. Excellent. Okay, have a seat. In your 40s? All right. Thank you. In your 50s? Great, thank you. Thank you very much. And in 60s plus? No. Okay. Okay, that was an attempted sort of visual exercise of the composition of the International Council, and how that the composition of the International Council reflects in a way the importance of the Young Buddhist Project. Yeah, so particularly looking at the number of people who, and by far the majority, I would say, who encountered the Dharma in their teens and twenties, basically, and a few people subsequent to that as well, but. It seems like the, and I think this seems to be true more broadly across Tri Ratna, that a lot of those people who are holding positions of responsibility encounter the Dharma in their teens and twenties, yeah, as a general rule. And I think that this is one of the reasons why our community is as strong as it is. There are only a few of us who are, well, there's only one of us who's in their 20s, only a few of us in our 30s, and lots of other people are much older. So what that suggests is that there's a wealth of experience here, and that the strength of our community derives from the fact that, we've all been all of us more than a decade, been involved in the Dharma, and working together, living together, practicing together. And so the narrative that I want to put across is one of, I think we're a strong community. And I think a substantial condition which leads to that strength is people with 10, 20, 30 or more years of experience living, working together and practicing together. And I think that's only possible on a big scale to the extent that people are encountering the Dharma in their teens and 20s. Yeah. Say one other thing as well. So about the in a way this is a kind of an argument for the Young Buddhist Project. It's saying that in order to have a strong community, you need people who have that kind of experience, and they only come from that length of time. Yeah, that length of time. The other thing I want to say in relation to this is to do with what we have to offer as well. What I'm trying to encourage is an abundance mentality with regard to what we offer. Particularly when I look at when I look up to people, or I find people I look up to in the order, they are often people who are just very impressive on an ordinary human level. They're wise, they're kind. They've benefited sometimes hundreds, if not thousands, of people, sometimes worldwide, and they have friendships which have lasted for decades, lifelong friendships, and that's what I think we have to offer young people. I think we have to offer a path which leads in that direction of becoming an impressive individual, of making a positive difference, and of having lifelong friends. So often when I'm talking to, in fact I did it on a sub-25 retreat recently, when I'm talking to younger people, that's what I say. Like this is, in a way, this is why I'm living this life. This is why 10 years on from being 23, I'm still here. And this is what I just really want to share, because I think it's of such value. So partly why I'm saying that is to counteract a narrative to the effect that if we don't have more young people, we're going to die. That is a poverty mentality. Yeah, it's a poverty mentality, and it's profoundly unattractive. I think we're in a far better position to say our community is strong and we have something of real value to offer young people. Yeah, because, and those are true, by the way. That's not just spin. Those are actually true. Okay, so the two things that resulted in me not just sort of this is an English expression, trundling along, or just kind of continuing as a participant in that centre were firstly encountering other young people, particularly at the big young Buddhist retreats, which were originally held somewhere else but now are held here. And what that said to me is I've got friends, and I'm going to have friends as well, people who are wanting to live the life that I'm wanting to live. So that made a big difference to me. And the second thing that made a big difference was having a project. So when I eventually moved from London to Oxford, one of the things actually Bante encouraged of me when I visited him was, well, why don't you start up a group in Oxford? And so myself and, well, Sangharuchi, as he became, two young Mitras, started up a group in Oxford, and that became our project. And so those two things of encountering other young people and having a project to take on, I think are both catalysts, are both ways of really engaging young people. And to cut a long story short, that's at the heart of the strategic thinking we're doing in the UK and Europe in relation to young people. What we're going to be trialling next year is it's basically a path of progression which enables people in their teens and 20s to meet others who are interested in Buddhism, practicing Buddhism, and to have opportunities to contribute. And just briefly, the way that's going to look is not dissimilar from what the Sikkha Project what happened in the Sikkha Project presentation. So, what we're going to be trialling is in some centres, mostly in the UK, they're going to be running a Radical Dharma 6-week introductory courses, specifically for people under 30 or under 25. And those courses then feed into a big central retreat at Adi Stana, you know, a sub 30 or a sub 25 retreat appropriately. And so then people who've been on those retreats will be signposted to single sex retreats or weekends, and from there be signposted to longer single sex retreats at particularly at the ordination training centres. That's our plan. And then from there, to start to be involved in running future introductory courses for young people, and be on the retreat teams for those retreats as well. So there's a sense of the strategy both enabling people to deepen their practice with others of the same age, and also contribute to that as well. I mean, it's extremely ambitious what we're trying to do. In a way, it's just joining up what we're already doing as well. And I think more generally, that would be the theme I'd like you to take away from this presentation, would be, practically speaking, just trying to join up what's already going on, and with an emphasis on young people. I'll say a bit more about that now. So the one of the key elements of the strategy that we're going to be putting in place is to do with, if you like, stage minus one of that path. So what I mean by that is, before people even know they're interested in Buddhism and meditation. So what I've become aware of, or particularly talking to Kashanti Kara at the London Buddhist Centre, is that they have an approach of targeting advertising to people who perhaps wouldn't necessarily type in Buddhism and meditation to a search engine. Presenting what they're offering in a way which is universal. One of the great things about something like Facebook advertising, which is what they're using and what we're going to be encouraging with this trial, one of the great things about that is you can actually be quite specific about who it is you target an advertisement to. I mean, scarily specific. If you have a look at the criteria, it's down to things like what Facebook believes people earn, you know. But what that enables us to do is to think more strategically about the kinds of people who would really take to the Dharma, who would really take to Tree Ratna's presentation of the Dharma, but who might not even know that Buddhism or Tree Ratna exists, which I'm finding really exciting. Yeah, really, really exciting. So, I mean, I'm particularly thinking about people who are really into sports, you know, martial arts, music, philosophy, art, professionals, particularly professionals in vocations, like teachers or nurses, you know, etc. The list goes on. I'm also interested in targeting high-earning people as well. I mean, I just reflect on my own friends. Probably by the age of 25, quite a lot of my university friends were earning, like, big money. Yeah, if six-figure salaries in some cases. That's six-figure pounds, like GBP salaries. So one of the things I'd be keen to do in the way we... we talk about ourselves more generally, is moving away from what I perceive to be the widespread view of Buddhism, or the widespread image of Buddhism, which I summarise as something like relaxation therapy for stressed hippies, something like that, yeah. Which is a particularly it's a pejorative characterization, but I think is one which is held more widely. The reason why I'd particularly like to be looking at the groups I mentioned is because what people who have those interests realize is the power of practice over a period of time, the importance of commitment, the need to work together, particularly in teams, the need to be receptive to feedback as well. All of which, from my own experience, have really enabled me to just run with the Dharma. So what we're hoping to do in terms of publicity is to produce resources so that people can just kind of just lift images and text from the resources available, and without much additional effort, although some money, I must admit, Facebook does require some money to distribute those more widely. Maybe I would just say something about the language, actually. So I've copied down a few titles. This was mentioned earlier on. I've copied down a few titles of events run by the London Buddhist Centre Sub-25s. But I'd just like to show you. This is just a sample. And I can tell you a bit more about the language in a minute. So I'll read these out if you can't see them. So the first one is called Mastering Friendship. Then Conquering Hatred. Meeting Grief, Leaving Home, and Dealing with Desire. So, just briefly, what strikes you about these titles? Are there any themes that come through when you look at those titles? They're short. Yes.
They all use the ing.
That's true as well. Yeah.
Which is active.
Very good. Yeah. Thank you.
Universal.
They're universal themes. Yeah, they're universal themes.
They're not explicitly Buddhist.
Yeah. So particularly, there's no jargon there. Yeah, it's completely jargon free. The other thing that strikes me is they're about a whole life, as well. So yes, they're universal, but they speak to. The wider stuff that they talk about in their blurbs, it very much speaks to a whole life rather than, a relaxation or a kind of an add-on to one's life. These are big themes that are relevant to one's entire life. So I'll just read a blurb for one of these things. So it says, this summer we're exploring stories from the life of the Buddha and drawing inspiration so we can meet the primary challenges of our own lives in light of his teaching. Shall I say that again?
Yeah.
This summer, we're exploring stories from the life of the Buddha and drawing inspiration so we can meet the primary challenges of our own lives in the light of his teaching. So if you notice, it's not things like... this level one meditation and Buddhism course... we'll teach you two fundamental practices, mindfulness of breathing and metta bhavana. And by the way, metta bhavana means loving kindness, cultivation, da 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 da. You know, it's something which is okay. People recognise the word Buddha, but it's speaking to their whole lives. It's speaking to them rather than speaking about us. Lots more could be said about that, but that's a general principle around language. And then something else that the London Buddhist Centre have been doing with their sub 25 publicity is, I'd like to be able to show you more of this, but I wasn't able to prepare it. So working on their images, and particularly images which show activity. And so a lot of images during their tea breaks, for example, are quite popular. Images which show faces of young people. But interestingly, by far the most popular image, and this is according to Facebook statistics, the most popular image is one where there are young people who are actually meditating, so not posing for meditation, but actually meditating. But you can only see them from their backs. But what you can see in front of them is the Buddha image. Yeah. Now, for some reason, Facebook says that is a really popular image. I don't know why, but reflect on that. I encourage you to reflect on that. I think there's something in there to do with the presentation of an ideal, actually. Yeah, the presentation of an ideal. So, I'm going to need to start wrapping up fairly soon. Maybe two or three more points. So one is that whilst I know that there are quite a few young Buddhist activities happening globally, if there aren't activities happening locally, to start small and be content with starting small. Subhadramati was mentioning the other day that the London, I think it was both the sub 35 and the sub 25 groups started with a handful of people, four or five people. Sheffield are running an introductory course at the moment in the summer holidays, the university summer holidays, and they've had 12 people and 10 people on that introductory course so far, under 25, yeah. Which is unusual as a number, I think, more widely in Buddhist centres, people of that age group. So being okay to start small, but that things can grow quite rapidly. The second thing is to do with culture, and I won't say any more than just echo what Dhammarati mentioned in relation to the Sikha project. What you've identified there as successful traits of from the London Buddhist Centre and Sheffield Buddhist Centre are true more generally. Yeah, where young Buddhists thrive is where there is that kind of culture. Yeah. And then the other point I'd make is to do with talking up to young people. And when I say talking up, I mean that as broadly as possible. So in things like, the sub 25 retreat we had here a couple of weekends ago, we had a lot of silence. We had fantastic pujas. And a lot of the people on that retreat were quite new, but they were happy to engage with puja in a way which sometimes older people aren't. I think you can get away with longer meditations as well with younger people. Communication exercises as well. You know, so there is that idea of talking up is to do with creating a sort of atmosphere of intensity. This is the real thing. You know, if you want to do Buddhism, this is where you can do it. And we're doing it authentically and seriously, I think, and to encourage the sort of the best out of the young people who come along. And the other thing in relation to that is just talking to them, for finding out what interests them, what their lives are about. You know, that in itself, even if it doesn't necessarily feed into something strategic, that in itself is very encouraging to young people. Okay, just final point then really is an encouragement to take this seriously as a priority, to take the Young Buddhist project in your area, and in the resources that you have to prioritise young people's activities. And I can talk more one-on-one or in small groups if you want to know what that looks like in your area. And also to tell this positive story, to tell the story that we are a strong community, and we're a strong community because we've encouraged young people. And that's what we have to offer. We have a whole life. The whole life is what we offer. Okay, thank you. Do we have time for questions? Yeah,
right. Judge, I'll see you.
That's good. I had a question about diversity.
Yeah.
Not just gender diversity, which comes up more often these days, but is that an explicit awareness of the project, and is there clear input into it in terms of how do we address, particularly outside of somewhere like London, where it maybe just happens more naturally, but how do we address the kind of white middle class, usually university educated audience? Out from that.
Yeah.
Sports is a good category, but
yeah.
Even then.
Yeah.
Could you say the question again, please?
Diversity, how to encourage diversity beyond, say, gender diversity, so moving away from a sort of white, middle class, university educated audience, reaching out to different classes in Western society, at least, different races, etc.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that looking at the sub-25 retreat a couple of weekends ago, there were a fair few people from London present, which is a more diverse place. And I don't know the exact statistics, but it was, I don't know, a quarter or a third of the people on that retreat were non-white. And that didn't seem to be through any particular effort on our part. So I wonder even whether there is something about targeting a younger age group which in itself perhaps even intrinsically brings in that kind of diversity. I've got other thoughts on that as well, but in a way they're smaller points, I think. I mean, it's interesting. So diversity in terms of race and also gender was both present on that retreat.
Mm-hmm. That's been consistent across the 4 years of those retreats as well. Yeah. That's been consistent across all 4 years of those retreats.
Yeah.
When you were describing the route by which people get involved, you said that quite quickly you're getting people onto single-sex retreats.
Yeah.
But why do you do that?
So it's the opinion of the steering group that I'm a part of that's a route to going more seriously into the Dharma.
So what about gender diverse people, not minority?
Yeah, so we thought about that. And there is a route for those people as well. I mean, at the moment, we're again, it's trying to join up the dots with what's already going on within Tri Ratna. So people who fall into that group, we would direct towards the gender diverse weekend. Yeah. So that, in a way, it's like that's a logical step that we can do. But what we want to do at every stage is to try to say, okay, if you've benefited from this, what might your next step be, and to try to flesh that out. But one of the things I'm hoping, and I don't know whether this is, I can quite call this strategic, but I'm hoping that the Young Buddhist Project will put pressure on other institutions within Tri Ratna, at least in the regard of gender diversity, because it is definitely much more of a thing for younger people. And if there is a groundswell of interest in that, I think that could be something which would help shift that, shift that theme for us, yeah.
You mentioned you're using Facebook advertising. Are there other platforms that you find are effective in reaching young people?
Well, I mean, we're using Facebook advertising because that seems to have been very successful at London Buddhist Centre. I think Facebook's lifespan is limited. I don't think we'll still be using it in 5 years. But there seems to be enough knowledge around how to use it well that it will serve us, at least for the time being. I mean, the other platforms, obviously, are things like, paper, posters, leafleting, your websites, I mean, it's interesting that Facebook and Instagram one would use rather differently. Facebook, it seems you'd use more for event publicity or advertising, whereas Instagram would be more. Now, if you've got the time and resources to put into it, Instagram would be more to do with like creating a backstory about what you're doing. Yeah, so you know, it would be the sort of behind the scenes at, you know, Aria Loca, and that's how you kind of build up a kind of rapport with your online audience.
So you're not using Google AdWords?
No, we haven't looked at that. No, if you know anything about that, I'd be interested to find out about it. Yeah. Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah,
Karen. Just thinking about the course that you mentioned, the 6 week.
Yeah.
Which sounded really great. So if you're in a centre where there aren't young order members or even necessarily very young literates to lead that,
yep.
You just get somebody to do it.
Yeah.
And try and get somebody young in the team. And
So when I produced a document a few years ago I created a somewhat controversial hierarchy of teachers to attract young people, and number one of that list was anyone who's on fire with the Dharma. I mean, it strikes me that young men from the LBC consistently tell me how much they love Deva Mitra, and he's like 74 or something. So really, that's a more important criterion. If there are younger people, yeah, bring them on board by all means. In fact, I'd encourage you to as a project, but it doesn't necessarily have to be young people. Yeah, thanks for asking that. Yeah.
Is
Ratnajoti, yeah. Thank you.
You've mainly talked about centre-based approaches.
Yeah.
Do you see any value in us doing more outreach to this demographic, whether it's universities to areas of low socioeconomic status or to particular communities?
Yeah, I think there's value in that. I mean, drawing on the London Buddhist Centre, I know they've put quite a lot of money into going to freshers' fairs. So for the beginning of the first year of a university term, actually going there and advertising the sub 25 events. They've got quite a bit out of that, though that's been quite expensive. I'd certainly encourage that, particularly of universities. I'm not so sure about outreach. If that's already going on and if that's a particular passion of yours, great. But I think there's loads we can still do in centres.
You don't think it's too restrictive in terms of the earlier question around diversity?
I think we're so how can I put this? It's like there's so many more people already within, you know, the kind of the a small radius of centres who don't even know we exist. I think we can do a huge amount just with that, and then if you have additional resources, kind of going out more widely. I think also follow your passions on it. You know, if that's something that really inspires you, yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Can I just chip in something to that? I don't know if this directly follows on, but it's probably worth saying that the aim of this, well, say, centre I'm at, the London Buddhist Centre, isn't to keep a separate sub-25, but the whole aim is to integrate those people in the whole centre. So that's why it's very important for us that those activities happen in the centre, because then you're saying, well, you've come to this Friday night or whatever for sub-25s, but now come to a regular Dharma night where there's a whole mixture of ages.
Yeah. And a similar thing goes with the strategy we've been talking about to host next steps at retreat centres where people might be training for ordination, so that they encounter what that atmosphere is like and think, oh, well, if I ask for ordination, this might be where I'd go. So you've already crossed the threshold at that point. Yeah. Don't know how much longer we've got. Yeah, Mr. Facilitator, great. Yeah.
Very specific. I'm interested in that specifically. Just forward to my centre, we have a lot of young people.
Yeah.
And some of us have already mentioned. And I was going to say, is there something you think would be appropriate specifically for helping young people the ordination of birth process, particularly in a place where there isn't a strong ordination process at all.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'd need to think quite a bit about that, I think. It'd be good to hear more about what you're already doing.
Yeah.
I don't have some. Don't have an off the cuff answer for that. Yeah.
So Damaratu was talking about, you know, in the LBC in Sheffield, they sort of raised the bar for sort of quite demanding
from
the very beginning. Is that your experience with young people? Is that particularly, is that what gets young people?
Yes. Just consistently, that's true. I mean, we were somewhat cautious about, for example, on this recent retreat, going into silence on the first night. We did, and it was completely up for it. You know, silence right through to the end of breakfast. There can be a sense of, they're younger people, and we want to just kind of make things a bit easier for them. But the Vedanya quote, I think, was absolutely spot on here. The greater the challenge, I think, the more people rise to it. And particularly, I hear amongst newer young people, they sort of talk with a how do I describe it? A certain awe about these 10-day Vipassana retreats, because they represent in their mind a certain degree of intensity. Now, I'm not suggesting we do that. But I am suggesting that we have our own brand of intensity, and that we kind of really develop that, really use that. I mean, it's kind of interesting. Both Sheffield and London have run events for young people where they've just plunged into the Pali Canon, unpronounceable sutta titles, and off they go. In some ways, that is more attractive, because they've tried the mindfulness apps, they've tried all sorts of other things. They want to know what the real deal is. They want to know what the serious Buddhists do, and I think we can present that.
Can I just ask, as an extension to that?
Yeah.
How much connection do you have with people cross culturally? Does that apply young people, for instance, in Germany or Poland or somewhere else? Because I keep also getting being in Poland, wanting to do something we talk culturally that wouldn't work. How much joined upness do you have with other young Buddhists across culture, and how much is similar and how much is not?
That's a huge question, particularly. My area of expertise is mostly mainland Europe and UK. I can certainly say that the from what I understand, the German speaking young Buddhist retreats are very intense. Mm. I remember on one occasion somebody telling me they did a Padmasambhava mantra for, well, I think Aryabandhu left after an hour and a quarter. So presumably it carried on after that. I'm just thinking of Hridayavada and Padmasiddha. You know, both those guys are a kind of exemplars of intensity. I'm sure there's a way that translation into Polish, if you like, of what I'm describing could take place, because it seems like those guys are the fruits of that, actually. Came and done.
Just to pick up on both those two points, certainly in Australia, they really are into pujas and things. Just wonder whether that, if you've got any thoughts around that, that we can make more of that. Because it does seem to be this thing that it's not just about taking on information about Buddhism.
What seems to be consistently the feedback I get from young Buddhist retreats is that the big puja on the Saturday night is the highlight. Mm-hmm. Loads of people shooting off into first dhyana or second dhyana during the Padmasambhava mantra particularly. I think often younger people have much less of a kind of dodgy religious upbringing or issues with that. That just seems to be the case. Yeah. At least, you know, in the circles I'm in, yeah.
More of a connection to you about the information. giving an example of a situation that is not the UK, Ireland, that is not LBC or Sheffield,
yeah.
Stockholm Buddhist
Center.
It's had a group for 10 years now.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I came to. We don't run the center in that same particular kind of way that those big centers we were referring to, but I was invited to be on the council as a person from the Young Persons Facilitated Group, and now I'm the youngest chair in the movement. 75% of the center team is sub 35, one mitra convener is sub 35, half the council is sub 35.
Yeah.
Just to give an example of like give confidence, give responsibility, and things will happen.
Yeah, that's such a great example, thank you.
Well, do you have time?
Yeah, well, there's always more I could say.
Okay, well,
thank you.
I think we're very fortunate to have Pranya Ketu. I think he's doing an excellent job. I think it's obvious from what he's been saying that he's put a lot of work and time into this, and he's creating insights for us which are helping us to create a more vibrant movement. So maybe we could just express our appreciation if you want to.